right, and welcome to another episode of Two Guys, One Level, a place where two guys talk about all things gaming. I'm your host, Tortuga, and I'm joined by the Pixel Perfect co-host, Pixel.
I'm here with the tantalizing terror, Tortuga, but you made me try to do alliteration off the top of my head. What is actually wrong with you? Why are you like this?
Words. Well, you know, got to kick it off with some bits of humor. I got quite a bit of things to talk about this episode. For me, it looks like everything is corporate related, and we know I love me some corporate bashing. So let me know when you're ready to dive in.
Oh, I'm ready to corporate these corporations.
All right. Well, let's start with my number one hated company, at least when it comes to gaming, Sony. Sony officially disclosed that they were in fact breached, and about 6,800 employees were affected, where data from their employees were pulled, not just about them, but also information about family members, like next of kins and things like that.
That is correct. It seems Sony just likes to get hacked every couple of years. It's like they're, I'm pretty sure it's part of their mission statement at this point. And you know, lately there definitely hasn't been any shortage of cyber attacks, especially ransomware attacks toward big companies. So for whatever reason, data, funds, usually some sort of money thing. But it's interesting because it's not like it was just Sony PlayStation, as we're a, you know, gaming podcast here, but it was multiple Sony companies, essentially.
Right. You know, yeah, it was Sony, like Sony, big Sony, not just a department of Sony. Big Sony was compromised, and it's crazy. And the thing that I find most shocking about this breach is, I forgot the name of the group that did it, but they were blasting out on Twitter for about a week, almost a full week, saying, hey, Sony, we hacked you. We've reached out. We let you know. And now we're putting it out to the public that we hacked you. And we want to come to, you know, some sort of financial agreement where we don't sell your data. So basically stop us from putting the data on the dark web, where then anyone can, you know, it'll go to the highest bidder at that point.
Exactly.
And then a week went by, and then the same group said, all right, well, Sony never reached out. We've reached out multiple times. That information is now on the dark web, open to anyone. And then about 2 days after that tweet, Sony's like, oh yeah, we got data. We got breached. Like, you know, like it's been out there for about a week, and then they acknowledge it way too late. So I find that an interesting tactic. And let's not forget that, who is it? Is it the FTC? No, for whatever reason, the SEC made it a rule that an American company has to report any data breaches, I want to say within 72 hours.
Is that what it was? I know we actually mentioned it here, and I know, because my memory is atrocious, I don't remember, but they did shorten it, because these people, like, you would find out about a breach like years later. Like, right. Oh, right, my stuff was taken care of in 2013. That's nice. Only a nice little decade. Yeah, so as of, we're still waiting for more information on exactly what happened. But all Sony has really given us is that there is an investigation underway, and pretty much throwing a prayer that none of the information stolen is from consumer accounts. It's highly unlikely. We're talking about, you know, at the very least 7,000 employee details. And if they can manage to get into any other area with that, that has any consumer accounts, sure, I feel like that is likely for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a big deal. It's a huge deal. I mean, I can understand a part of Sony not publicly admitting that they were breached, especially if they're doing an internal investigation, right? As soon as this company reached out to whoever and said, hey, we breached your servers and we got this much information, and I'm sure they gave bits of proof to prove that they captured some bits of data, right? And probably running around with their heads cut off trying to figure out what happened. I mean, it's never fun dealing with a breach. The cybersecurity team, you know, that's their bread and butter. There's the dedicated department, dedicated team to this kind of stuff, and to have your basically entire mission just fail your purpose there, it definitely sucks. So I get that, but I don't know. It rubs me the wrong way that it took Sony so long to acknowledge the breach, at least publicly.
You know, not even that. Sony should be the first one spending money to really get, you know, top tier blue team, red teams in their cybersecurity, you know, from defense, their incident response team. I mean, remember, Sony is known as like the company to get hacked at this point. Back on PlayStation 3, what was it? I think it was like Lizard or something was the name of the hacker group.
Probably, maybe, I don't know. It's been so long.
Yeah, but like PSN was down for weeks. And there were millions of accounts that were compromised at that time. And so, you know, at what point do you have to wait for the company to prove to you that they're able to keep your data safe? Because again, I mean, it's not just Sony PlayStation at this point. Like we mentioned, it was Sony. Like Sony Interactive, I think, is the parent company.
Sure. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, that sounds right. No. I mean, I agree with you 100%. It's wild. Absolutely wild. And we were having this conversation off podcast, but it's you can't help but also, you know, on the same side of that coin. Or the other side of that coin is the fact that you don't see this kind of publication with Microsoft. And,
right.
And they're just as big as Sony. And they have a lot of things out there infrastructure-wise that, you know, I'm sure is constantly under attack day in and day out by various groups, countries, and I'm sure other corporations would love to break through Microsoft. And I brought it up off podcast. There have been breaches within Microsoft's applications, like software, like Office products. And there have been breaches where whatever a third party vendor is contracted out to do that's partnered with Microsoft, they've been compromised, and then they'll gain access to small bits to whatever that vendor had access to in conjunction with Microsoft. But Microsoft themselves, at least not that I've seen, have been compromised where people have been gotten as far as the inside of their internal network. I'm not aware of anything to that scale, but they have had issues in the security side that I'm aware of, again, with their applications and some of their partners in the past. But yeah, that doesn't compare to Sony losing out to internal private data. That's wild.
Yeah, and it's not entirely their fault, you know, as much as we definitely want to bash the corporations. It's coming through, it's a file transfer platform. I'm trying to remember what the name of it. I think it was like MoveIt is the name of it. And they're the ones that were ultimately compromised because they're a massive file transfer platform. And I want to say even my employer was affected through that as well.
Wait, are you saying that's how Sony was recently compromised?
Right.
Oh, I haven't seen any updates as to how. So it's the same as with Microsoft then, because that's happened to Microsoft in the past. Like I said, a vendor that you're contracted with to handle a certain part function of your company, it gets compromised, and then whatever they're handling is what gets captured and not necessary. So that changes my perspective a lot then.
Right. And that's why I wanted to bring it up, because that came up through VGC and Bleeding Computer. Because I said we're going to be the first ones to bash Sony for their practices. But in this instance, it's not entirely their fault here. But the hacker group that I know you also wanted to mention is like CLOP, CL0P. That's the name of the hacker group there.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, that kind of forgives Sony a little bit that they necessarily didn't drop the ball, because it sucks when, I mean, you do your best as a company to vet whoever you're partnered with. You check out what they have in place, what systems they have in place, but you can't hire their team. You can't vet their team. You can't train their team, right? It's just the best you can do is just get a feel for how they're set up, if they've had any incidents in the past, what kind of security systems they have and their processes and procedures. And then you do your best to vet it. It's difficult when you start dealing with third-party vendors, especially with a company as large as Sony and as large as Microsoft. So that sucks. I mean, it's a common tactic for bad actors when they can't get the target directly, just they start doing recon and see who are they affiliated with. Maybe we can get through that way. And that has a higher success rate than going for someone directly and almost as impactful.
Right. And this is actually something from a business to business perspective. Why a lot of business insurance exists in the first place. So there's essentially a type of insurance called Arizona Omissions that has been very, very prominent in the past probably past decade or so. It's really been seen more and more because it covers so many things, data breach being one of them. Essentially, there's been such an uptick in, like we mentioned, in like cyber attacks or, you know, technology, like in general, like from breaches to just straight up backdoors and things like of that nature, that the insurance is basically now a requirement before jumping into business with a vendor, or they require the vendor to have anywhere between minimum like $1 million in coverage for that.
Gotcha. Yeah, well, I don't think $1 million is going to be enough with the damages this is going to cause. 7,000 to 7,000 plus info that's out there now. So those people are going to start getting emails, texts, phone calls, and the whole nine. It sucks. I've been there where my email and old passwords have been compromised. And then all of a sudden you start seeing, you know, oh, you're trying to access this account. And I'm like, the hell I am. And just people have access now to my email or are trying an old password on every website that they can get their hands on. And I'm like, this sucks. This is garbage. So just public service announcement, put multi-factor authentication on anything and everything that allows it. And don't use the same passwords on multiple websites. And I highly suggest password managers to handle the complex passwords and various passwords that you now have to memorize to access many, many websites.
Indeed.
Only thing, for everything. Only thing you can really do to thwart these types of nuisances that come up from time to time. All right. Next up, we went with a company that I despise. Let's talk about a company that I like, but not in a good like. Epic Games. I don't know if you saw their announcement, but they are changing the business model for Unreal Engine. No longer is it going to be free. That's the clickbait title.
No.
That's the clickbait title. The entire title is, it's no longer going to be free for things outside of video games. So we've said it before that there are companies out there, major corporations or directors and film industries and TV shows and things like that, that use Unreal Engine to develop the backdrop. Mandalorian comes to mind as one of them that does that. That's recorded mostly all indoors. And it's just Unreal Engine filling in the background with whatever they design. There's another big one that has said that they've used Unreal Engine for the same thing, to fill in the background. It's just a green screen, and then they use Unreal Engine to make the actual environment. Anyways, since there's no method in place for them to basically receive royalties, that's how they make their money when people make games using the Unreal Engine. There's, you know, code injected every time that it sells on Steam or whatever platform that's used that lets Epic know that this game has this many copies and whatever their rule is. I think it's the first million is free, is yours, and then they receive 5% after the first million. There's nothing like that in place for artists making quick videos, either for YouTube or for large companies like Disney making TV shows, and even Netflix making TV shows and or movies using Unreal Engine. So they are going to change that business model. So now if you're going to use it for that creative space, you're going to have to subscribe to Unreal Engine in order to use it for that type of creation. So with that, now we have the backlash of that gatekeeps people like in college or people that are wanting to get into VFX movie directing that don't have that experience. And Unreal Engine is a great tool to kind of like get your feet wet and see what's out there and what can be done with VFX. But they're going to be immediately just gate kept out of this once this business model gets put in place.
No, you're definitely not wrong from that aspect. And I have to add an addendum to when we finish up on this, because Epic is also in the news for another reason. But Suzuka is absolutely right. I mean, I personally cannot see what the downside is to have it not be used by like VFX people outside of gaming. You know, if they really wanted to focus on something like that, maybe they'll have like some sort of paid thing. You know, they're, you already are able to buy assets, so why not buy like I mean, subscriptions are the way to go. Like that's basically what everyone's been doing. So I guess I don't see their logic behind cutting that off. Because it's not like the engine itself is specific to gaming. You know, like if it could be done on a computer and transferred over to some sort of video platform or however it is that they do it. I'm definitely not in the movie industry. But it's, I don't know. I just don't see the logic behind it.
It's just the fact that their engine is being used and it's reaching tens of millions of people from TV shows and movies, and they see nothing from that. And yet, Netflix, Disney are making bank off a free tool, and that's not sitting well with Epic. So they're trying to get their piece of the pie from their tool that's being used for these high grossing shows and movies. So they don't have a way to receive that data automatically to say, all right, if your movie makes over a million, we'll take 5% after that. That's not in place. If they can maybe figure out a technological way to make that happen, that would get rid of the subscription thing. But my guess is they weren't able to figure out a way to do that, or the movie industry just told them to kick sand when they proposed that this was going to happen. So now they're just forced to change their user agreement for that space to be subscription only, is my guess. I wish we had an employee dealing with these contracts at Epic to pick their brain a little bit more about their thought process here. But this is just me trying to put pieces together as to why they would even go this route. And that's the only thing that I can think of.
And it makes sense. You know, I mean, that's actually part of the next thing that I want to talk about. It's a monetary thing. Like if that's the point, I originally thought when you were mentioning the reach, I thought you were talking about potential download capacities or something along those lines, or the store itself being flooded where, you know, their main client base is not able to access it if the store is down, so they can't update, make the games. Because I know they came out with like a Fortnite editor or something along those lines, like some sort of creation tool for Fortnite. And I know that's been picking up, so that's been seeing a lot more traffic. But in my instance here, Epic Games is actually laying off about 800 people, or more than 800 people.
Oh, yes. North Carolina, right?
I don't know if it was specific to the state, if they have an office there, but essentially, since you're mentioning that, you know, companies like Disney are basically getting the free tool out of this, one of the things that they did mention is that they've been spending way more money than they can earn. So they're apparently, it's approximately 830 employees, about 16% of Epic's total workforce. And that particular layoff said employees were informed of the layoff via an internal memo, all hands meeting and whatnot. And then, of course, CEO Tim Sweeney came out and said, and this is a quote, "For a while now, we've been spending way more money than we earn, investing in the next evolution of Epic and growing Fortnite as a metaverse-inspired ecosystem for creators." Oh, yeah, there's actually a little bit more to that I saw. "I had long been optimistic that we could power through this transition without layoffs, but in retrospect, I see that this was unrealistic." And one of the main indicators that I saw of this, and they're actually using Fortnite as their trajectory. Fortnite itself saw a stagnation in revenue that it was bringing in. You know, like it was somewhere along the lines of probably close to like $1 billion in like microtransactions and things like that. Battle Pass, V-Bucks, what have you. And I guess they saw a decrease. And that's kind of what led here. That's, you know, it's like in in the actual U.S. economy, there was an article a while back from an exotic dancer, and she said that they're the first ones to feel if there's a recession is coming because people cut off, you know, their entertainment first. So when exotic dancers start to see that decrease where they're not making as much, that's like one of the prime indicators that there's going to be a downfall in the economy.
Yeah, I've seen that. And I just looked up real quick how much Tim Sweeney even makes a year. Of course, that information doesn't show, but it does show here that he's worth around $7.4 billion as of 2021. So Tim Sweeney could suck it. He can easily afford to keep his staff on for a couple more years without breaking 1% of his net worth.
You know, it's crazy. They were actually talking about that and mentioning the previous Nintendo president, Iwata, I think that was his name, the one that passed away a couple years ago, that when the Wii U wasn't doing too hot, he actually cut like his salary to like almost nothing to ensure that he didn't have to do layoffs.
That's what I'm saying. It's not there are things that can be done to keep the people under you employed. If that was truly something he cared about, that would have happened. So I don't want to hear that this is something we try to avoid because he has the means to avoid it. I understand from that level, from a C-level perspective, the two easiest ways to go from red to black is to either increase your sales or services of whatever it is that you're in, or cut off your costs. And usually that means your employees or third-party vendors or what have you. Looks like Epic did both in this case. They're going to start charging for VFX space, and they also cut the cost of 830 whatever employees.
Man, I'm about to ruin your day, bro. So to add to that, to really set Tortuga off a little bit, the layoffs actually came a day after Epic announced that it's increasing the price of its V-Bucks, the Fortnite microtransactions.
I'm not surprised. Honestly, because that's what I'm saying. At that level, that becomes your primary focus. You no longer care about anything else in that corporation. Once you start having C-level executives as a part of your functioning, the heartbeat of your corporation, that's where that saying corporations are going to corporate. That is when you have those vermins in place. And this is tale as old as time. It's just the easiest way to go from red to black, especially if, like you say, it's been years that they've been overspending, and yet that's a C-level decision, and they're not the ones paying the price, though. From this decision-making level, they're still keeping their jobs, they're still getting their paychecks. So that thing, things like that always tend to rub me the wrong way, because it's horseshit, absolute horseshit.
Mm-hmm. And you know, unfortunately, they're not even the first ones. You know, there have been immense gaming industry layoffs that happened in 2023. Creative Assembly announced that there may be some layoffs coming soon. They're the ones who were working on that game that was basically completed. It was like some sort of looter shooter called Hyenas. I don't know if that's ever came across your radar. I think it was like the 2.5D one, if I'm not mistaken.
It sounds familiar.
But that it was canceled like without even with like one beta, I think. And then it was like that was it. Activision let go of a small number of employees from the Hearthstone team. EA, Take-Two, CD Projekt, Meta, BioWare, Firaxis, and Unity have all had layoffs this year.
So the interesting, the interesting thing about those spaces, tech and gaming, is that it was standard practice for almost a decade, I want to say, probably even longer, where you would literally overhire employees, especially programmers. Essentially, the idea was you would overhire and underutilize, but you kept your competitors from having access to these programmers. That was like the idea. That was the game. That was the goal. And COVID brought to light that this was stupid because now we have to overpay and underutilize all these programmers that we kept from our competitors that we can no longer maintain because no one's buying games as much as before. Like you said, entertainment is usually the first thing that gets cut when people have to readjust their budgets for whatever reason. So it's just one of those things that I think that practice is just coming to an end. All these companies are still going to be fine. They're realizing that they can still function optimally without as many people. I mean, they could have before, but they, like I said, it was just standard hiring practice to overhire just to make sure your competitor doesn't have access to these well overqualified people.
Yeah, and it's a terrible motto, and it actually has shifted a lot, and I think that's why we're actually seeing a pretty significant amount of strikes from unions across the country currently. No, it's not really gaming talk, but you know, we had the writers strike and the actors guild come together for the first time in like what, 60 years, I think, was the last time they striked together, because of the monetary compensation. So with these companies going through the motions of, like you mentioned, you know, overhiring, underutilizing, just to keep these developers away. What was it? I'm pretty sure that was what happened with Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton. just to keep me from winning. Yeah, watch Hamilton if you haven't. That is my endorsement. It's pretty interesting to see how the hiring landscape itself has changed because of the COVID pandemic.
Yeah, for sure. It always sucks being fired, but if you're worth your salt, you'll land on your feet. And plus, most of the time, in most cases, they were making way more anyways than, you know, the average Joe in that field. So if they were financially savvy and just saving for a rainy day, they can survive until they get the next gig. Programmers tend to be in much need, and their skills are quite transferable, it seems. So anyways, that sucks. Epic. Yeah, Epic not in good light. I always give them good praise because they have done some good things. Unreal Engine being free to play around and to explore. I mean, I've played with it for many hours. Just to get a feel for just that side of the gaming industry. And it's been eye-opening, and it's cool to see the technologies that are available there.
Yeah, not only that, and then being like such a forefront of the industry, like the actual upgrades that they did from Unreal Engine 4 to Unreal Engine 5,
right,
have also been substantial. And again, they have probably one of the best, you know, I don't know what the proper term would be, vendor compensation models, you know.
It's first million. It's all you bank the first million, and then you just pay Epic 5% after that.
Yeah, I mean, that honestly can't be beat. I actually have something pretty minor for you. But there's a Sea of Thieves update that's coming out. I think it's called Safer Seas game mode is what they're labeling it. And basically we'll be able to, sail solo or with friends.
Interesting. I mean, I feel like Sea of Thieves isn't populated to the point where the game is dangerous to deal with PvP. I mean, I don't know. I enjoy the PvP aspect of Sea of Thieves. I think it's cool that you can pirate other ships. You know, as they're plundering an island, you know, you see a ship that's just docked, and you're just like, let me just go in there and take their stuff real quick while they're busy. I like that. It gives that just another element to the game that I quite enjoy.
Yeah, no, it's definitely fun. I think Valheim could really try to do something like that. I think that's a game mode that can definitely benefit from it. It's mainly melee combat. So, like, you don't have, like, the, I don't know, whatever, flint gun or whatever in Sea of Thieves. But it's pretty interesting. Not exactly gaming news, but I did come across an article that's super cool. I'm going to link it to you real quick here in the Discord. But there's a company in Japan that would build you like a 15-foot mech for about $3 million. And
dollars or yen?
I'm pretty sure it's dollars. And it's really cool to look at. It looks more clunky, like an armored core mech, rather than a Gundam that people have been comparing it to. But I think overall, it's super cool. I would jump in one in a heartbeat. And it goes a whopping 6 miles per hour.
I mean, better than zero.
Better than zero, indeed.
That's interesting. I mean, I've never been super into Gundam. I know it's a huge fandom.
Massive.
And I know that Japan has an actual Gundam, like, statue thing that you can go take photos with. I've seen photos of that. So, I mean, it's pretty cool. Definitely shaping the future for some Ghost in Shell. I can see a bit of that happening. I'm here for it.
No, I definitely am too.
Not for 3 billion, though.
We don't have 3 billion, but if we had Bezos' bucks, I don't know, man. I don't know.
I would have been Batman a long time ago. I'm just saying.
We also have Counter-Strike 2. Looks like it's officially out. I know you and I personally have not really played. The closest thing we came to was Valorant. Very, very similar gameplay, I'm sure you're aware. It's being met with mostly positive reviews, but even Shroud has come out to publicly say from what he's played that he feels like this is actually the end of Counter-Strike.
That's just being dramatic.
I would say I was actually thinking the same thing because I'm pretty sure they did it to clean up the code more than anything, and they included like all the maps. I think you do have, I don't think anything transferred over as far as like the weapon skins. Yeah, I think that's like probably like the only thing that I saw. I'm not 100%.
At some point, the main server is going to shut down. They're not gonna operate Counter-Strike 1 and 2.
Right, exactly. That's the only thing that I can think of off the top of my head. Let me see if there's anything here real quick. Boom, boom, boom. Yeah, they don't really mention anything, but I saw a whole bunch of streamers who spent like the first who knows how long just like buying whatever boxes or whatever, just opening them up and things like that. But yeah, just like Overwatch, they're not gonna keep that first server open at all.
It sucks for that community. I feel for them. I can't imagine if that something like that were to happen. The only thing I can compare it to would be like League of Legends, where they just say we're gonna go with League of Legends 2, and then all those skins, all that money you put into it, all that hard work, all those characters you bought just gone, scrapped, and you're gonna have to start over in LOL 2. I would stop playing. That in that respect, I can see why he would say this is the end of Counter-Strike, but I don't think it's the end of Counter-Strike. It might be the end for Shroud, because he doesn't want to start over. That's fine. But Counter-Strike, it's still going to keep going. It's still going to pull in people. It's one of the highest viewed esports tournaments, period. Mm-hmm. So it's not going anywhere just because Shroud doesn't like it.
Right. And I'm there with you. That's just something that he came out and said. I don't think one person is going to be enough to derail a whole launch for Valve, you know?
Especially just a streamer.
Right. I mean, big streamer, nonetheless, but...
Don't care. A streamer is not going to derail Counter-Strike. Something as huge as Counter-Strike? No way.
Yeah, I hear you. There's actually been a lot of rumors going around for Smite as well. You know, it's my, I guess, preferred MOBA, that there's a Smite 2 in the works, and completely unsubstantiated, complete rumor. Don't even take it with a grain of salt. It's nothing has been even remotely brought up for it. But, you know, people were talking about how can they potentially ruin it. And one of the things they said is if you had to start over, like with your gods and stuff, you know, there's also skins, right? Think about all the skins you put in.
And Smite had some very cool timed exclusive skin that you could only purchase it in a very small window of time. And if you got it, awesome. If not, SOL, right? Better hope that the next timed exclusive skin is as cool as the one you missed out on. And as far as I know, they've never reopened. At least I can't think. I know League has reopened some what was supposed to be timed exclusive skins, and they've re-released them. But if you purchase them after the original purchase, at the bottom of your game card, essentially, it would have the year that it was re-released to kind of indicate you did not purchase it in the original wave. So, and something, but you still got the skin though. So they didn't truly honor it, but at the same time, they did. I don't know, it was a little loophole for that. Speaking of unfettered rumors, apparently the sequel to Cyberpunk 2077 is in the works.
Yeah, I saw that. I feel like they're literally just making the same mistakes all over again. It's literally just in like a concept era.
Yeah.
And it's like, why? Like, you guys have had such massive success with the DLC. I actually did jump into Cyberpunk after the update. I have noticed some changes in like the cutscenes so far, but other than that, nothing too substantial as of yet. I think they did fix up Keanu Reeves, Johnny Silverhand a bit. Looks more like Keanu rather than some beady-eyed weirdo with glasses. So they did clean up that part. Nothing, again, that's like the biggest thing. I thought they would change up the intro. So I went back and did my most recent playthrough. I went with the Nomad. Definitely has the most interesting start. Then Corpo and Street Kid. And again, nothing substantial. It's like the exact same intro. And even like meeting Jackie, nothing changed there. Like that whole intro portion is just the exact same. I've only done, like, I just did the heist where you got the relic and same deal. No changes there.
So the story is overall the same. They just changed some of the visual effects.
So they also changed like the tree, the tech tree, your skill tree. That whole thing was completely redone. But still nothing that I've seen is as big as they've mentioned so far. You know, like again, it's seeing massive success. People have definitely started the game from scratch to, you know, per CD Projekt's recommendation so they can see everything. And then jump into the DLC. And the DLC is apparently pretty phenomenal.
I mean, I'm sure they had many a years to fix the formula. I saw an interview. Well, I didn't see it. I read the summary of an interview with, I want to say, the director for Cyberpunk. And he said, not a true apology, but that it just sucks how Cyberpunk came out. The game was nowhere near ready. Everyone in management knew the game was nowhere near ready, but they had the pressure of those investors that they needed to get that game out so they can start making money back on this super long project. So they released an unfinished game, and they released it knowingly. And I know that they were under investigation by the Polish government, because that's not allowed. I would really wish the United States would, you know, crack down on crap like that. But they were under investigation under that. I don't know whatever happened with that. I'm sure they paid some kind of fine. But yeah, it's just one of those things that they knew and basically said, all we can do is fix it. You know, we fixed it. We've poured many hours into getting this game where we initially wanted it to be for launch. And, you know, they're still working on DLC and other side projects. And it was also in this interview that they said that the sequel to 2077 is in the conceptual phase. So they're still brainstorming and figuring out the story ideas for that. But it's in the works, right? You had that's the initial stage of, you know, they're already dedicating time and resource into getting it started. It's going to be years, maybe 5-ish years is my guess, before it's fully completed. Just hope that they do it right the next time.
Right. We do have a couple things coming on. I'm pretty excited for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I know it's a Sony exclusive for now. I know we mentioned it. I really, really do hope it gets a PC release much sooner than its predecessor, Final Fantasy VII Remake. And it is alluding to that from the most recent trailer. It said that it's going to be an exclusive until at least, was it May or June of 2024, which is only like 5 months after the release of the game, because it's set to come out in February. There's been rumors of Red Dead Redemption 2 getting a Switch release as well. I don't know how that's going to work out. That is a heavy, heavy game. There's also some people over at Larry and the Baldur's Gate 3 team have actually put out a list of some of the best multi-class builds that they have. State of Decay 3 apparently might not release until 2027, which is pretty massive. And I can't believe we didn't touch on this when we went through Sony as well. Sony CEO Jim Ryan has actually stepped down as CEO officially.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
Yeah, that's how much we like this guy. He's been, he has actually launched every single PlayStation in some way. Like, he was part of the team, starting with the PlayStation 1, now the PlayStation 5. Awesome for him. I mean, they were good consoles for a while. I really think they started to see a decline from a upper management perspective and consumers perspective on the PlayStation 4. I really think that's where their greed really started to show, because PS1, 2, and 3 are really considered some of the best consoles ever, right? You know, even being up there with Nintendo. We got Spider-Man coming out soon. And Assassin's Creed Mirage apparently is getting some pretty decent reviews. Solid 7 and 8s. The decrease in the points seems to actually come from the story itself. That is pretty simplistic, but they are praising the actual gameplay and how it's going back to its stealth mechanics. It's much closer in tune to the newer versions, right? So it's that Origins, Odyssey, Valhalla. So it's still closer in those games as far as like gameplay and movement. But you do still have like your insta kill from the older games. So I still think the older games are better. I'm really not too crazy about this new formula. But I'm glad to see that they are trying to kind of cater to what made their game so great.
That's pretty neat. I want to tag on the also that happened with Ubisoft, Assassin's Creed specifically. They finalized the partnership with Amazon's game service, whatever, Luma, whatever it's supposed to be, where you can buy Assassin's Creed through that service now. So that's a thing. I thought they scrapped that program, but apparently not. It's still there in full force.
It is still there. It's actually, it pops up whenever you go into Prime Gaming. You know, you got your free games or free DLC or whatever. And then, yep, play these three games on Luna. I was like, I don't have that. Luma, whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever it is. I forgot about it. But yeah, that's been a thing I've seen promoted this month. So yeah, if that's your jam, if that's your way into gaming, by all means, I definitely wouldn't go that route to access my games. Steam is more than enough. I don't need another service. Epic is good because Epic actually has things that Steam doesn't carry, because they're like overspending apparently on some exclusive content. So Epic is making sure that they are here to stay, basically. Now that they can afford it, that they laid off 830 people.
Right.
Zing.
Because that's what they can do. Something
I didn't know this was happening. I think it's cool and terrible at the same time. Apparently Elon Musk is trying to add video game streaming to the platform previously known as Twitter, now X. So now he wants that. You know how Facebook has game streaming?
Yep.
He wants
Facebook gaming, that. I think it's what it's called.
Yeah, you're right. He wants to add that to this platform.
I did see that. I don't really have a lot of faith on it. I think a lot of what he's offering on the platform is for subscribers to their, it was Twitter Blue. I don't even know what the hell it's called anymore. Whatever that subscription-based service is, to be a premium user on the X platform. But it feels more like a cash grab than an honest addition. However, I do know it is part of his vision. One of the things that has been mentioned time and time again is he has wanted to create one app for literally everything. You know, it'll be one consolidated app for you to do whatever you want. And I think having the Twitter infrastructure being purchased by him, where he just has to modify the code as he wants and then add new code for whatever addition he wants to do. I think that's working in his favor from that aspect. I just don't see how they can. I look at it like the whole Marvel versus DC kind of thing, where Marvel, you know, took like about a decade to really put its platform out there in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And DC just kind of wanted to, you know, they had like four or five movies between Iron Man to Avengers, and then DC just came out with Justice League, like right away, without even like prepping anything. And it kind of feels like that. Like he's just not really testing it out. Like he just, like when he announced it, that's the first time the engineers heard it.
Yeah, he's notorious for that.
So that's something that it's just a concern from that aspect, that if it does launch, it's going to be rushed, and really no way to stabilize it. You know, for, you know, if you look at things like even YouTube Gaming has a pretty stable platform, Twitch, even Kick is doing something good, I guess, since people don't really want to leave it. As new as, you know, Kick is, it still has that stabilized portion as far as the video quality, not talking about the content.
Their business model is not stable.
Yeah, not talking about, just talking strictly on the its stabilization of the video and the output.
Sure. Yeah. That's still not crashing.
It has not crashed. That's what we're saying here. It has not crashed. Not that it will.
The website will. Unless they change something, because the current formula is in the negative. I still can't believe people are hyped about a website where the founder said, we plan on losing money for the first 5 years.
Yeah.
Terrible.
I don't know if you saw this. I know you and I have been gaming for quite some time at this point.
Yeah, I got a year or two under my belt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just a year or two. Mm-hmm. there's a live action Pokemon series coming out. I don't know if you saw it. Yeah. It's called Poke
Series.
Yeah.
Oh, is that the hotel thing?
No. It looks like it's going to be. Let me just read this for you. So it's going to be a drama show following Madoka Agaki, a university graduate who quits her job in a small Japanese port town to head to Tokyo for a new start. However, she bites off more than she can chew, taking on a presentation at her new company, Adventure, that sees the fate of the company resting on her shoulders, and then enter Pokemon Red. Her mother, worried about Madoka's stressful experience, sends her a care package. It's her old Game Boy and an original copy of Pokemon Red that she played as a child. Revisiting the game for the first time in 20 years, she realizes it just might help her tackle her own problems. Pokisume is billed as the first Pokemon human drama, which sees the main character grow through her experiences with the game.
So are there going to be actual Pokemon in the game in this show, or is just...
I don't think so.
Interesting.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's going that way. It really looks like it's just going to be her playing and probably getting ideas to use in her day-to-day life.
I mean, that's an idea. That's a concept. Out of all of the ideas I've ever heard, that definitely is one of them.
That's basically what I thought. So just like you, I saw Pokemon live action. Let's get to it. Let's do this.
I think over here, like Pokemon Battle, like Detective Pikachu, the movie, but you know, as a series, I'm like, I'm here for it. And I was still creeped out. I was a little creeped out by seeing realistic Bulbasaur and things like that. Still a little creepy, but you know, I could get over it. But that's not the case here. It's just,
yeah, it was just not the case.
Just a TV drama of the character who just likes Pokemon.
Yep, and will likely use it in some way, shape, or form to succeed in her new role. I don't know. I don't know how that's gonna work. I don't know how pressing A is gonna help you move forward. Like, I don't.
I don't know. I kind of want to watch it now just to see how it unfolds. I feel like it's going to be one of those things where they're only going to do season one and not pursue it further. But you never know. They might have a fantastic story, and we're here bashing it. It's probably the best story ever written.
Crying. We would have that luck, to be honest. Like, that would just be podcast, two guys, one level, bashing Pokemon.
Number one TV series in a generation.
Game of who?
I'm sure they put ChatGPT to work and make it a 10 out of 10 script. So
crying. I want to say that is it for me. Yeah, that's pretty much all I got. There's an Avatar game that came out, is coming out, and I just do not care for it because it looks so bad. Like
Avatar, which
the Airbender one.
Ah.
Like, I don't know how you have such a perfect formula to make a game. All you have to do is create a new avatar, and you can probably make one of the best games in a generation.
You know, honestly, that's not a terrible idea. So I know that season three, book three, I don't know how it's separated.
Yeah, it's usually book three.
I feel like the books are the internal seasons. I don't know. The next avatar that we're going to watch after Korra dies is supposed to be an earthbender, and that's already in the works. They already got that going. But honestly, making a game tell the story of an avatar is actually a fantastic idea. That would be awesome to let that be the platform, the medium used to tell an entire story and make it all canon, right? Make all the cutscenes canon. I love that idea. That's something you should definitely pitch to your folks at Nickelodeon.
All right. Okay. Okay.
No, but that I love that idea. Just what they did with the Matrix, like it was there was just an episode of lore that happened on the Xbox that was canon, and I totally can see them going that route because that's, I don't want to say easy money, but that's pretty easy money to make. I would 100% jump on that. But let's see how the fandom holds up after the Earthbender saga.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty much all that we can do at this point. There were a couple things there. Naughty Dog pretty much leaked by themselves a rumored Last of Us Part 2 coming to PC. And they also have basically all but confirmed the cancellation of their multiplayer game Factions. And that's pretty much all I got from that aspect.
All right. I covered all my corporate bashing, so I have nothing else to offer. So I'll go ahead and sign us out. So definitely thank you all for hanging out with us on yet another episode. If you like to show support beyond just tuning in, you can definitely check the link in the description below to things like our YouTube channel, Patreon, Discord, things like that. If you enjoyed today's discussion, definitely let us know what you thought of this episode and any previous episodes or any future episodes on Twitter at @2guys1level. Again, thank you all for hanging out with us, and I will catch you all next time. Until then.